Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to seek answers to questions large and small. And of course, if you've got some questions you'd like me to find an expert to answer, just send your request to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org and I'll find someone to tell us what's up. Question today is how to prevent domestic violence, how to make ourselves more aware of it. October is Domestic Violence Month, and we on Vashon are very fortunate to have an organization that addresses that issue pretty thoroughly. I have with me the acting executive director of Vashon's Dove Project. She is Heidi Jackson. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a delight. So I have a question about Domestic Violence Month. Who decides that it's Awareness Month?
I'm not able to answer that question. I have no idea who decides that. I think that's on a national level, so I'm not quite sure.
Domestic violence awareness is all over the country this month.
It is. It's a big month for us and for getting the message out about what domestic violence is and how we can stop it.
How is the Dove Project getting that message out?
Well, a variety of ways. We believe in saturation is the word of the day, and domestic violence is a common factor in relationships, as common as 1 in 5 women experience intimate partner violence. And the stigmas of our culture really kind of box that into a married relationship or a relationship that is something other than just dating. But really, intimate partners is anything from dating to marriage to fixing the mic. So, at any rate, It's something that is prevalent, and it's something that only thrives in silence. And as you shed light onto numbers and statistics, there's a lot of aha moments as far as a whole community realizing that this is actually something that's actually going on, and it's a problem in our community.
In our Vashon Island community, you said mm-hmm. 1 in 5.
1 in 5, yes.
Is that a national statistic?
That's a national statistic, but our numbers are, when we started, when we were incorporated in 2013, annually we served 43 clients. And this year to date, as of September 30th, we have served 347 unique individuals. And so if you think about 347 households affected by intimate partner violence, that's a pretty large number on our island.
As a percentage of 6,000 total households, I think that's the number here. That's mm-hmm. that is significant. Mm-hmm. So we're a small town, mm-hmm. And I know domestic violence is a delicate issue to deal with.
Yeah, most people don't really think that it really exists. In fact, that is something that people just outright say, is they like, oh, you work for the Dove Project, period. And then the two questions that they say are, is that really something that happens on this island? And then the second question that everyone always asks is, well, how does this compare to everyone else in the nation? Like somehow they want to somehow quantify it. I mean, they want to be able to say, well, that's maybe not so bad, you know, compared to what's happening in the rest of the nation. But we kind of are right in line with numbers that are right in line with the national average.
So sorry, folks, Vashon is a microcosm of the rest of the country.
Yes.
We have everything that everyone else has. So what should we be aware of if some of us out there are kind of dense about domestic violence and whether it's happening mm-hmm. here on Vashon Island? What should we be starting to pay attention to?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, I guess you kind of backtrack a little bit to say that you have to give yourself a little bit of grace as far as it's uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable topic. It's not something that is easy. Even if you have a close friend who is in a situation, that can even feel uncomfortable. And so the hope is that we can help give tools to community members that enable them to go past their uncomfortableness and or to embrace uncomfortableness and to potentially still have some sort of an intervention. And that could very well be just interrupting a moment. If you see something happening in the grocery store, instead of going down the path of, well, I don't know any information about the situation, I can't get involved, to say, well, what can you do besides that? You can be an active bystander, is what we call it. An active bystander looks like maybe you say, excuse me, do you know where the sugar is in the aisle, even though you know exactly where the sugar is mm-hmm. in the store, but you just interrupt that moment to give space in a violent situation. And that feels easier to people. A lot of people visualize that bystander intervention to be something that is very robust. And, you know, you're coming in blazing and you
have to break up a fight.
Break up a yeah. fight and have this like huge, but it could be simply like dropping something on the ground by someone's foot and just being like, well, excuse me, let me pick that up. And then all of a sudden you've interrupted a moment. And it's very rare that violence picks up right where it left off when that moment is interrupted. And if a whole culture is interrupting those moments, then all of a sudden it changes the whole viewpoint of how people accept violence as an acceptable part of relationships in our society.
Do we accept violence as a normal part of relationships?
In my opinion, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We as a nation.
Yes. I had a hard time coming to terms with that reality. And as I was on the board for years before I took this position, some of the realizations that I realized about what domestic violence is and what sexual assault is and how our culture basically aids in that not just turning a blind eye, but also in having the mentality, like in sports teams in the high school, like boys will be boys, and the attitude that violence is something that maybe just happens sometimes. It's a one-off situation in a relationship. Well, it was just a moment, they blew up or whatever. But the reality is that violence is something that we just turn a blind eye to because we don't know how to address it, I guess.
What are some examples of violence that we accept? And I'm thinking of a couple of things. One might be the difference between emotional and physical violence, mm-hmm. Control within a relationship, mm-hmm. and how that happens. Well, give me some examples of those things that as you were on the board, mm-hmm. might have surprised you.
Right. Well, abuse looks a lot different than what I ever boxed it in to be. I mean, everyone kind of always has that viewpoint of someone walking around with a black eye and that's, yeah. you know, but the reality is that it's subtle. And it's intentional. And that's the hard part. No one really wants to accept that intentionality. And so it looks like isolation. It looks like public humiliation, public embarrassment. And on a small scale, on a large scale, it looks like financial control. And it looks like, you know, as you mentioned, like the emotional abuse, like the constant criticism and berating, and a person can walk out of a violent situation and just feel like they have absolutely no worth. And so I feel like those are like the main attributes that violence in relationships and our society kind of, it's not talked about because
it's not blatant. It's not that obvious.
It's not that obvious. And so when you see something happen, that's not necessarily blatant, but it doesn't feel right. you're going to give whatever situation the benefit of the doubt because you don't really want to get involved. And the common is like, well, I need more information. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But that's not necessarily, that doesn't help. That doesn't give agency to a person who is being berated or belittled in public or whatever.
And what are the impacts of long-term domestic abuse, essentially? You talk about a person being berated. It seems to me that the long-term effects of that could...
Oh, it filters all the way down to health. I mean, like, there's more risk. I mean, typically, you're at like a 50% higher risk, especially in teens, to have substance abuse issues. You have women who have experienced long term physical or emotional abuse. They show that they are like a third higher at having like ailments like asthma and like specific like thyroid issues and different health issues that I don't have off all the top of my head, but yeah, mm-hmm. it's actually, when you start looking at the statistics, it's pretty staggering at how it does have an effect on other aspects of a person's health besides just emotional, not just, but.
And it seems as though also that would diminish a person's ability to leave an abusive situation.
Right. Because when you're choosing to leave, you're choosing to leave financial security. You're choosing to leave a roof over your head. And if there's kids involved, then you're choosing to enter into an unstable environment. And because oftentimes there isn't all of that set up for a person. And so it makes it very difficult. And then, so you have these choices that you need to make. Okay, I'm going to move into instability. And I have emotionally and psychologically been beaten down for years. And so you don't have all of the tools that you really need to be able to enter this period of instability, per se, successfully.
Confidence is limited. Strength is limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does Dove handle a situation? First of all, what does a person who is experiencing an abusive relationship do first? How do they access the services Dove has to offer?
Well, we offer advocacy and in a variety of different ways, and how we describe it as survivor led, is that survivors really lead their path of empowerment. And it's I guess I would say that they can, I mean, there's no, every situation is so different, and every person is so different that there's no right way. I mean, there's no specific way that a client comes to us, and they can come via we get a text message, or a friend calls first and says, "Hey, I have a friend. What should they do?" But it really is a simple phone call, email, and then we start, you know, going through like safety planning. Sometimes survivors feel that it's best to stay in the relationship. And so then we work with survivors to say, okay, well, if you stay in this relationship, how can you be safer in this relationship? What are ways that can provide safety? And, what networks of support do you have to do that? If it is, I want to leave the situation, what does that look like? And what are the first steps? And so, and advocacy it's many, many, many phone calls, many, many, many hours of work to basically, empower and give resources to a client and resource referral to clients.
It sounds almost as though you're trying to rebuild their self-confidence enough to help them take care of themselves. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with Heidi Jackson, the acting executive director of the Vashon Dove Project, and we're talking about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We can do this thanks to the generosity of Windermere Real Estate. They support all our community information programming and our emergency alert service. We were just talking about the steps that one takes to access the services that the Dove Project has to offer here on Vashon Island. And you were saying, Heidi, that it's there's always there are many different paths for a survivor to access those services and many steps to take.
And oftentimes it's I'm going to take two steps and then you don't hear from a client for like 6 months and then they're ready to take that next step. Or, I mean, it's a daily choice to try to remove yourself or be safer in a violent relationship. And you have to continually make the decision that you are worthy of being in a relationship without violence.
That sounds almost like the process of breaking an addiction.
Right. If you talk about the cultural stigmas that kind of support violence, in the same way that the survivor has that acceptance of the idea that because they've been living in it so long, that this is okay. And this is the way that I have been surviving. And so to disrupt that creates such a level of instability that it's hard to cope, especially when you don't have the emotional strength or empowerment to really embrace that instability.
So the Dove Project advocates really become partners in helping these people.
Yeah, walk alongside them.
How do you maintain confidentiality on this tiny island? Everybody knows everybody.
Exactly. That is one of the aspects of our organization that we take a lot of pride in the fact that we honor confidentiality as one of our highest pillars. And we cannot acknowledge that someone has walked in our doors, even as a client or as a non-client. We have the highest level of confidentiality as far as we don't really, everything within those walls stays within those walls.
Do you record intake sessions?
No. We don't even keep files. All of the files are through are just simple demographics for grant purposes, but nothing, no details in the files.
So how do you keep track of people? Like when you mentioned that a client might come in at one point and then not be back for several weeks, don't you worry about that person or check in with them?
We do check in. We ask them if what confidential lines of communication feel comfortable, and we communicate with them in that way. Some people don't want to be communicated with. And some people don't have a secure way to be contacted. And we do offer Hope phones, which are Verizon. And unfortunately, I don't even really want to mention it because they're just discontinued it as of December 31st. But it's a little, and there's not another organization that's really offering this, but it's basically They're phones that people can use. And so in the past, we've been able to give these Hope phones out to clients to say, okay, well, if you don't have a secure way of communicating, here's a way. And that has been helpful.
So are you looking for someone to fill that gap or some organization?
Yeah. I don't know really who that would be, but yeah, those disposable phones are something that we definitely need to we need to fill our coffers with them, and we also need to figure out an organization who's willing to offer those. Yeah.
I want to get back to the question of denial and awareness. Mm-hmm. You said when we were talking about that domestic violence is something people don't want to acknowledge, mm-hmm. that it actually exists. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about those people who are actually committing domestic violence or actually committing abuse. Do they deny it? And or are there people working with the abusers?
Well, yes and yes. It is not uncommon for a person who behaves abusively to feel that they are victims. And that is a common, I think, across all DV agencies, they will all say the same thing. It's very, you can actually tell the difference when you have conversations with a survivor and a person who behaves abusively, because the survivor will come in and they will be apologizing that they're even in the room, and a person who behaves abusively will often present themselves in a way that is, look at what has happened to me. I have been wronged. This is everyone else's fault but mine. And it's very distinctive. And there is a organization in Bellevue that does work with people who behave abusively.
How successful are they in turning that around?
Statistically, the statistics are low, in the 1 to 5% range of success.
Wow. And the success rate for survivors? As in getting out of abusive relationships or moving on?
You know, I don't know how to really measure. I don't have that a statistic that relates to that. The empowerment-based model that we kind of adhere to, it feels like I can easily say 70% of people who come into our office who want to be safer, whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. they can get to a better place of empowerment. But it is a long journey, so it's hard to really quantify that. Sorry.
That's okay. because the success isn't necessarily that they actually leave a relationship.
Right.
It might be that they have found a way to empower themselves sufficiently to be safer in
right.
that relationship.
Because it's not our solution that they're trying to find. It's their solution. So
challenging situation. We're talking with Heidi Jackson, acting executive director of Vashon's Dove Project, on the occasion of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which mm-hmm. is this month, October. And we were talking a little bit about what the average person should be aware of. One of the situations that occurs to me is parent and child.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in a store or another public place mm-hmm. and I observe a parent being too rough with a child in one way or another,
mm-hmm.
What do I do with that?
Well, that's bystander intervention, as we talked about earlier, the act of bystander. And so we have taught in the past basically the 3 D's of distract, delegate, or direct. And so what you do is you can distract, like what I mentioned before. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to judge this situation. I'm not sure what's going on, but it just feels like this situation shouldn't be happening. Well, what do I feel comfortable with? Well, I can, like I said, like drop something on the ground or, you know, excuse me, do you know where the flower is or whatever? Or you can do direct, which is, hey, something seems a little off, and that has a lot of judgment to it. So that doesn't feel necessarily comfortable for people. Mm-hmm. And our suggestion would potentially be to whoever, if it's a child, to talk to the child and not to the parent and say, oh, are you okay? Hey, are you okay? And then the other situation is delegate, which means talk to someone else in power and whatever situation that you see, and to say, hey, something's going on. I think that something needs to happen. I don't feel comfortable doing it, but I do feel like something should happen. So those are kind of like the three kind of categories of responses. But what's really exciting with the bystander intervention is that it's when they've launched it in college campuses, sexual assault and violence has decreased by 50% in the schools. I know, it's big, because what it does is that it empowers people to intervene how they're comfortable instead of being bigger than who they are, which is really what you're like, well, put all of your fears and everything aside and behave totally uncharacteristically. And this just simply doesn't happen.
Hero, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it just simply doesn't happen. Human nature is, you know, you're going to respond the way you feel comfortable responding. And so the beauty is to say, yes, that's great. Here are ways that you can. So
we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to leave people with some tips, if you will, of what to watch for. Mm-hmm. I know you've said you might detect that something doesn't feel right. Could you be a little more specific?
Sure.
If I'm among my friends or people that, you know, neighbors, what should I be looking for?
Well, I think that the best thing to really understand is what abuse really is. And abuse is really is the manipulation of power. And whether that power is emotional or if it's financial or if it's physical. And that's where you start seeing that, because you can be, and it's funny when we teach this in the middle schools and the lunch hours, but you could just be a jerk, and that doesn't mean you're abusive. You just, but abuse is really saying I'm like in the situation you brought up, like the mom, and I mean, there is a lot of power that parent has over that child and pretty much their entire well-being, really. And so when you see that power dynamic being used to create harm, that is really what we as a community really need to keep our eyes out for.
In whatever form that might take.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just being sensitive to other people and to the situations around you.
Be good listeners.
Heidi Jackson, I want to thank you for joining us here on Real Talk. Heidi is the acting director for the Vashon Dove Project, and she's been helping us increase our awareness of domestic violence. You've been listening to Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at lunchtime to answer questions, large and small, and again on Fridays at 6 p.m. Thanks for listening, and thanks to the composer of our theme music, Luke McQuillan.